Less than 10 seconds now. The confetti is going. The balloons are up. 6, 5, 4, 3. Happy 1998.
Edge of kids, they got the dreamer's disease. Edge 14, they got you down on your knees. So alive, or busy, still say please.
Hello, and welcome to the Over and Back Classic NBA Podcast. I am Jason, and with me as usual is Rich. Hello, Rich.
What's going on?
Not too much. We are back continuing our NBA 20 Years Ago series by looking at January 1998. Happy New Year, by the way.
Oh, yes, yes. It was great. Grand day.
Oh, yeah, absolutely. You know, very excited to see what 1998 brings us. You know, it's going to be a very exciting year in the NBA. You know, who knows what's going to happen? I mean, maybe the Jazz are finally going to, you know, pull it out this year, win their championship.
I think they have to. I mean, they made the finals last year. The Bulls are reeling. I mean, not reeling, but, you know, the Bulls don't look dominant. So, yeah, I think the Jazz got a really good chance.
Yeah, I mean, you know, who knows? Scottie Pippen could be traded any day now, so.
There are many offers out there. Yeah, Supersonics are looking great. I mean, there's a lot of teams that are looking good. This Bulls thing, I don't know.
Yeah.
Falling apart at the seams. I mean, how do you win a title when everyone's, like, worrying about what's going to happen next? Nobody likes each other. Like, there's no way you can win a title that way.
Absolutely not. There is no way that possibly could ever happen.
Literally no way. Yeah, exactly.
Yeah. We can just write them off right now. Yeah.
Right.
I mean,
exactly.
Yeah, they're playing okay right now, but yeah, I'm not buying it.
Find me one example in sports history of a team that had people that didn't like each other that won a title. You're not going to find it, Jason. I promise.
Absolutely
you.
Not. You got to get
never
along.
Find it.
No. I'm not even going to bother looking because I know
no,
that you're going to find it. So
yeah.
Why would I waste the effort when it's obviously not going to happen?
Right.
Yeah. So one thing that is interesting about January 1998, well, really the mid-90s in general, is that there are a lot of the dominant players, and I think we're actually kind of reaching the end of this in 1998, a lot of the dominant players are, you know, well under their 30s.
Yeah, it's interesting, and you know, you kind of... I think initially when you look at the league and you look at the stars and stuff, you assume that, yeah, it's just a lot of old guys going on here and a lot of old guys doing well or whatever. And it's really not your eyes deceiving you. This is unprecedented, the amount of 30-plus-year-olds, and we'll even get to 35-plus-year-olds, that are not only doing well, but like really dominating the league, like really on top of the league. And it's not like, you know, there's a bunch of 30-year-olds and a bunch of really young upstarts. It's like these 30-year-olds are the league. Like, they're dominating it right now. We did a little bit of digging. We used win shares here. So we find that 56 players over the age of 30 accumulated 10-plus win shares in a season in the history of the NBA. And this is until, you know, obviously the current day. For decade-by-decade comparison, there's more than double this decade than the next closest decade, which is the 70s. So here's the breakdown here. I didn't include the 40s because there was only, I think, like, you know, 1949 was the only one that really got included there. So 1950s, there was three players 30-plus that had 10-plus win share seasons. 1960s, you get 19. The 1970s, our first big blip, we get 26. Well, that goes down in the 80s, back down to 26. The 1990s, 56. 56 players, 30 or older, with 10-plus win share seasons. Insane. If we kind of peek into the future, too, you might think, oh, well, that's just kind of common, you know, nutrition, da-da-da-da, yada-yada. The 2000s, 46. So it drops, you know, obviously the 2000s are still right up there with, you know, the 56, but it's a 10, you know, player drop-off or whatever. And then to date in the 2010s, and, you know, obviously we only have a few years left, there's only 20. So I don't think that, I mean, that unless, you know, all of a sudden there's going to be a bunch of dudes, but yeah, 20 this year as well. So it was really just an old man's game in that decade. And if we break it down year by year as well, we see that the years with the most players that had 30-plus year olds with 10-plus win shares, 1997 had 12 players in the 1997. And that's 96-97 for the record. 1996, 8. 1972, 7, so that's where the 70s kind of pop up again in there again. 1995, 7, and then the year that we're really focusing on right now, they have 7 as well. So, I mean, obviously, you look at that, 6 of the top 10 years historically are in the 90s of years where, you know, the amount of players getting 10-plus win shares, 30-plus years old or whatever. If we expand that to 35-plus, it's not quite as impressive for the 90s, but it's still pretty good. Historically, there have been 19 seasons all-time when someone 35 or older had 10-plus win shares. 1970s, you get 2. 1980s, you get 5, largely propped up by Kareem. Kareem, I think, had 4 years, you know, 35 plus, still getting 10 plus win shares. 1990s, only two. The 2000s, you get 9. So you get a little bit of those guys in the 90s that were getting older, then, you know, sort of got to the next level. Karl Malone has a few in there, I know for a fact. And in the 2010s, you only have one. What's interesting, though, the league leaders in NBA win shares during the 90s, they feature 4 30 plus year olds, Michael Jordan, 96, 97, and then Karl Malone, 98, 99. So they're leading the league a lot of those years. We're talking 96 through 99. Somebody 30 plus years old is you know, doing it, but it's kind of nuts here. And there's pretty much, as you said, kind of at the top, this is kind of the last year of the trend, though, because we do see a big drop off. I mean, a 10 player drop off in the 2000s, and you know, some guys still hung around in the 2010s, obviously, would go completely away. But you know, this year really cuts it off because Jordan's obviously going to retire. Guys like a Robinson, Hakeem, Ewing, Barkley, and Pippen all kind of fall off and stop becoming those all time great players. And Malone wins the MVP in 1999, and then you know, after that, it's really all MVP winners in their 20s. You know, you get the Kobe's, the Duncan's, and obviously into the LeBron years and stuff. So this is really a pretty big deal, but it does kind of speak to the NBA's, you know, we always talk about what was the reasons why in the 2000s the NBA's kind of struggled a little bit, and people a lot of times point to like all the stars almost ending, you know, on, you know, this year or the next year, all those kind of big 30-year-old guys that had propped up the league for so many years, they're either gone or they're not the same, you know, players, and that next generation just wasn't there yet to sort of step it up or do anything. But it's kind of weird because it's not like there was this generation that wasn't doing well. It was just that these 30-year-olds were just playing their asses off, you know, into the, you know, an unprecedented length of your careers. And I'm not quite sure I know exactly how or why that happened. I don't know if it was just a rare case of these guys just being all-time greats all at the same time.
Yeah, I mean, I think that's part of it. You know, there were some weaker drafts in the late 80s and early 90s, you know, kind of like 86 through 91-ish, you know, where there were, you know, there were some years where it just was really bad. There were some years where, like, you know, some really good players were drafted, but not quite, like, elite, like, MVP-level players. Like, you know, Gary Payton came out in 1990, and he was never quite, you know, MVP-level, but he was obviously all-NBA-level. But, yeah, I mean, if you look at kind of the mid-90s, the guys who are, you know, winning MVP or up there, it's, you know, guys like Hakeem, you know, Ewing's, you know, perennial candidate, obviously Jordan, you know, Barkley, and those guys are all kind of reaching that point when they're, you know, either like 29 or into their 30s. And the guys who are like emerging, you know, Shaq obviously is there, but like Shaq, even though he was, you know, he played really well and he was on some good teams, he was kind of seen as a little bit of a disappointment. He dealt with some injuries there and was not, you know, winning MVPs. You know, it was usually like he sometimes fell into the top five in MVP, but like he usually was well behind the winner. But yeah, you know, whatever reason, obviously, you know, I think Malone and Jordan are really, you know, like the key guys who are really just performing, you know, based on what you would expect based on their age. I mean, some of the guys as they're getting into their mid to late 30s, you know, Hakeem and Ewing are falling off a little bit, although still really good, you know, Robinson and Pippen. But there's not really, you know, those guys in their mid to young 20s, you know, whatever, for whatever reason, they're just kind of not quite reaching what you would, you know, things are going to happen that are not quite, you know, getting them where they're, you know, taking over. Like Shaq isn't quite, even though he's awesome, he's not quite supplanting, you know, these other guys as, you know, as the best player in the league. They're going to have to kind of leave the league or fall off before that's really going to happen. You know, Grant Hill, obviously he's really good, but he's going to deal with the injuries in the future. Same with Penny Hardaway. And there aren't like a whole lot of guys, you know, up until, as you talked about, you know, obviously Duncan has come in, like he's a rookie, you know, Kobe's emerging in his second year, Iverson, you know, Jason Kidd's, you know, about to kind of come along, you know, those guys, you know, I don't know if it's just a matter of just clearing the older guys out of there or if it's just it took a while for them to kind of emerge or.
Yeah, and that's what I kind of wonder too, the clearing out, because that might be a thing where it's like, you know, we're just going to keep going with this guy because why not? We don't have somebody else really ready in the wings or whatever. And that's maybe why a lot of these guys accumulated these seasons, because it's not like every one of these seasons is an awesome season. A lot of times you can just accumulate win shares by just playing a lot and scoring a lot and doing that. And that might be an issue too, where it's like there's no need to, you know, because we get guys like, you know, Kevin Willis, but he obviously goes on for many, you know, much longer or whatever. But there are a lot of guys that you know, you look at their seasons, they're not great seasons. They're not, you know, elite level seasons. They're just good seasons where these guys get a lot of opportunities and whatever. Of course, we're not talking about the Jordans and some of these guys are still doing, you know, real good, but that could be a thing too, where it's like, well, we don't have a guy to supplement, you know, or supplant this guy. So, you know, we'll just go with this 30-year-old or we'll go with the older guy. Whereas, you know, now you might want to be more inclined to, you know, get that guy out of there and go towards, you know, younger teams so you don't see it quite as much. But I don't know. It was a fascinating decade, definitely, for the 30-year-olds.
Yeah, we're going to have to look and see if there were any trend pieces on, okay, yeah, these guys are, you know, in their 30s are performing at levels we haven't really seen before, whether that was something that was really, you know, particularly noticed at the time. And also, yeah, I know at the time there was definitely anxiety over the idea of, like, you know, this new younger generation, you know, they don't appreciate, you know, this as much as, you know, guys like Jordan did. They don't have the same work ethic, like, and you know, there's a lot of anxiety over, you know, with commentators and maybe fans over, you know, this new generation supplanting the other one after so many years. We'll kind of look more in maybe next month or, you know, as we move on. I think it's especially going to come in the 99 season with the lockout and all that good stuff, about you know, kind of the fears of what's going to happen in the NBA as these guys are retiring and these, you know, new guys, you know, maybe who are perceived to have or have, you know, these flaws that, you know, are this generation is, the league is not as good a hand with the generation as it was with the past generation, whether right. that's true or not, the idea that behind that. So interesting stuff. So another thing I forget who gave us this idea, to be honest, but one of our great Twitter followers, I'm sorry for forgetting offhand who gave us this idea, but the idea of looking at so League Pass was a thing, but obviously the internet in 98 is not what it is today, so it is not is not widespread. But the idea of League Pass rankings of which teams we would want to, you know, just watch in 1998, looking at the teams that might be most fun to watch or up and coming teams or, you know, whatever choice you might want to make, aesthetically, looking at what teams might be the most interesting. So you kind of broke it down a little bit. You know, we looked at the idea of, okay, looking at younger teams, looking at teams that were, obviously, you don't want to watch a team that's going to get beat, you know, really badly every time, looking at teams that, you know, play at a decent pace and, you know, can actually get the ball in the basket and, you know, might move the ball around and things like that. So you kind of broke that down a little bit into some categories.
Yeah, so just kind of looking at you know, different guys and different teams and depending on, and this is a lot of, I think, what we value, and you might value completely different things, you know, in terms of like I valued and you kind of agree as well. I like a young team. I like, you know, a team that plays fast, as you said. I like a team that wins a lot, you know, and wins by a lot and stuff. So there was kind of some fun ones to look at there. In terms of like ages, I mean, obviously the teams that you look at, the youngest teams in the league, the Boston Celtics, Cleveland Cavaliers, Toronto Raptors, 76ers, Clippers. I don't know if you're going to want to watch too many of those because their margins of victories are not good because they lose a lot, including Toronto Raptors, who lose by almost 10 points every time out. So maybe not the best, but they're you know, a pretty exciting team with some stuff there. Then you got some older teams. You got the Rockets are the oldest team in the league, the Bulls, the Supersonics, Magic, and the Knicks. But as far as those, I mean, you kind of have to weigh that a little bit, where the Bulls are, you know, in terms of margin of victory, they're winning by 7 points every game. The Supersonics are winning by 7 points. Another part about that too is you want a team that just wins all the time by a lot, like, because that's, you know, sort of the argument that people make today about the Golden State Warriors. Like, yeah, they're fun to watch, but is it really that much? You mean, you kind of want to watch close games too, so that's kind of, you have to weigh that a little bit. But in terms of like margin of victory, the teams with the most margin of victory, I feel like I see a team lose a lot, like a lot. The Denver Nuggets are good. They're at minus 11. Yeah. They lose by almost 12 points a game. As I mentioned, the Raptors, the Golden State Warriors lose by about 9 a game. The Clippers, the Grizzlies. If you get to games that are close here, it's kind of funny. The Houston Rockets, they are, margin of victory is minus 0.7. So they, you know, they'll lose by about a point. And that's, you know, kind of a fun team because obviously that's a team that's sort of on the rise in some way, or people might think they're sort of on the rise, or they're, you know, a veteran team. You got Barkley. So it seemed like they should be a little bit better, but they're, you know, just barely losing every game. In terms of teams just barely winning, the Wizards are a fun one. They're just winning by about 0.5 points per game. The Timberwolves are winning by just 0.7, and they're both pretty interesting teams because they're young, they're developing, and you'll talk a little bit about them here, where there's got some, you know, young stars, you know, a young team, kind of a young nucleus coming together for both those teams. So that's kind of fun. The Blazers are winning by only about a point per game. And if you want to look up for blowouts, you got the Jazz, they're winning by nearly 7. The Bulls are winning by over 7. The Supersonics are winning by over 7. And I thought this is the most interesting, the Lakers winning by almost over almost 8 points a game. So pretty cool there. In terms of offensive rank, so here's the teams that with the best offenses. The Jazz, I would never have expected the Jazz to points per 100 possessions, but there you go, 112. I always thought they played like slow as shit and boring as hell, but I guess they kind of did, but it was working here for 112.7 points per 100 possessions. The Lakers at 111, Seattle Supersonics at 111, Indiana Pacers at 108. As far as worst offenses, again, you probably don't want to watch these. series, but the Golden State Warriors, the Denver Nuggets, Dallas Mavericks, Sacramento Kings, Toronto Raptors there. And then the last thing we looked at is pace, because obviously, and especially in this end, in this era of the NBA, you probably want to find a team that plays pretty fast. So you're not going to watch the Orlando Magic because their pace is 87.1, an excruciating 87.1. The Hawks at 87.7, the Indiana Pacers at 87.9, Miami Heat at 87.9 as well. Then you look at the highest pace teams, and again, this Lakers team comes up, so that's gonna be an interesting one to talk about here. 93.6, so that is the highest pace this year. I know that seems insane because I believe that's like the second lowest pace, or maybe tied for the lowest pace, you know, this current season, but that was the best we could do in 1997-98. So 93.6 for the Lakers, 93.3 for the Boston Celtics, the young Boston Celtics. So that's kind of a fun team there. The Timberwolves, this is a team that's kind of emerging here. That, you know, they have a lot of close games, young team, young nucleus. Their pace 92.6, and then Toronto Raptors, if you want to watch them lose and kind of go quickly. There you go, 92.6 for them, and the Clippers at 92.4. So unfortunately, a lot of teams that play with a high pace are also terrible, so that's kind of a way to rank it there. So yeah, I don't know, Jason, did you have a list of teams that you're putting up on your League Pass rankings?
I did, yes. So we talked about them before, how fun they were, but the Phoenix Suns, I mean, they've got Jason Kidd and Kevin Johnson and Steve Nash, and you know, so a lot of great passing there. They do play, you know, some of those. They play those guys actually like in three guard lineups. They played really small, you know, once in a while. But they also, you know, they have like an interesting mix of big guys. You know, Clifford Robinson, Antonio McDyess, Danny Manning, who's like a great passer, Hot Rod Williams. I mean, they just had a real interesting mix of some, you know, some crafty veterans. You know, McDyess, who was an athletic finisher. They also had Rex Chapman, who's kind of fun to watch, who, you know, was reasonably reckless in his 3-point shooting at the time. So. they just were, you know, aesthetically fun to watch. You know, they weren't exceptional in pace. They were like ninth in the league, but you know, they were up there in offensive rating, or actually they were more middling in offensive rating. So they actually probably were like more of a better idea than they were necessarily, you know, they would have kind of played fast, but they didn't play that super fast. But they still, I just think with the talent there, that's a fun team. I mean, obviously, if we're making this choice early in the season, we're not going to know how it's going to be. Obviously, we're not going to know what Steve Nash turns into, too. So it's kind of hard,
sure,
to
right.
judge us without letting future knowledge impact us. But nevertheless, they were my number one team. Who was your number one team?
My number one team, and you know, it seems a little disingenuous because like they're a team that kind of sucks. Because I mean, obviously you're doing the League Pass, so you're like, oh, you know, I don't need to, you know, worry too much about what's on, you know, TNT and TBS and all that and NBC or whatever. I want the teams that I can sort of watch. But one way or another, I'm going to try to watch the Lakers this year because, you know, they're probably going to be on national TV a decent amount. But still, you know, they're a team that hasn't been great for a couple years, so maybe they're not on national TV that much. I obviously don't have the national TV, you know, listings in front of me, but they're a team. I mean, you look at that and the perfect blend of, you know, they're winning by a lot. They have some really fun games. They're playing at a pretty decent pace. Their offense is good. It's just all around. I mean, everything that you can kind of check, they're there and they're really working. And it's actually interesting. I recently fired up. I have a Genesis game of like NBA Live 1997 or whatever. And I fired it up and I'm looking around or whatever. And I go to the season mode and I looked at like, you know, 10-year-old me or whatever the hell you actually had a season going with the Lakers at that time. And I was like, oh, so I mean, I guess I enjoyed them. Like I really enjoyed, cause I was watching this and I played through halfway of the season or whatever. I didn't make any trades. I was looking at my team and stuff. And I was like, oh, okay. So that was a team that I enjoyed as a kid. I really enjoyed them. And like, you know, I'm not a huge Lakers fan on any level. So it must've been that I found them exciting at that time. So it was kind of cool. So I thought they kind of leapt up the list there, but yeah, they're a little interesting cause I don't know what the national TV implications are for them, but still I'd find a way to watch them no matter what. Cause that's a team that's on the rise. You got Kobe, you know, sort of emerging. Shaq's doing his thing and a lot of complimentary pieces as well. So I'm definitely into the Lakers.
Yeah, I mean, they have obviously Eddie Jones, you know, Nick Van Axel's fun to watch. You know, they got, you know, they're deep and talented and, you know, aesthetically pleasing, you know, unless you're just hate the Lakers that much. But yeah, my number two team was the Timberwolves. You've got, you know, Garnett emerging, obviously. You got Stephon Marbury and Tom Gugliotta as like a really, you know, fun young nucleus. This is their first year of success. They're finally playing well. And, you know, that's always enjoyable to, you know, for that team, you know, that had suffered quite a while, you know, since 89 or 90, whenever they first came into the league. They also they play pretty fast. They're seventh in the league in offensive, they're third in pace and they're seventh in the league in offensive rating. So they're, you know, putting the ball in the basket. basket. They don't quite have like the, you know, necessarily any, you know, particularly great passers on that team. They do have Terry Porter's a backup point guard, but they don't have like a, you know, they weren't necessarily known for their passing. I'm not studying a whole lot of game tape, so maybe on the court it translated more than I think it does. But nevertheless, that's always, you know, that's always kind of a fun thing of, you know, the idea of league pass, of having a young emerging team. They definitely qualify there.
Yeah, definitely. My my number two team is, and it seems, again, like, you know, depending on national TV or whatever, but if I can, I'm going to try to watch the Bulls this year, just because it's a team that sort of, they're going for history. You're watching, you know, one of the greatest ever and what could be his last season. You know, he sort of hinted towards this could be it. You know that this is the it for that team as well. Like, that's this is your last opportunity to see this team. You know, this team that really the team of the decade, one of the greatest, you know, teams ever, you know, assembled or whatever. They're done after this. Pippen's not coming back. Jackson's not coming back. Jordan's not coming back. Robin's not coming back. This is your last opportunity to see them. So, yeah, you're going to see them on national TV a lot. But it's like, you know, if you have a chance to watch this and watch greatness while it's happening, you can't miss it. As they're on the path to you know, win their second three-peat of the decade, like, yeah, you got to watch every game that they have going on, whether it's on national TV or not. So,
yeah, I mean, Ron Harper is coming back, so they're not necessarily,
that's true. Ron Harper, yeah, and Kukoc, yeah, are coming, right, back, and they're bringing in, yeah, some you know, some hot guys from overseas. This Cornell David guy is a real baller, so this is
gonna, yeah,
yeah. Dragon, yeah, Tarlac is probably on the way, so I mean,
yeah,
I don't know, not all
days are gonna be, yeah, right, they might be in championship contender after Jordan, you know?
Right? I mean, that
it's
guy,
a possibility,
you know? and you know, franchises do win titles, so it's you, yeah, know, it's, you know. Yeah. If Jerry Krause can assemble, you know, that team, I think he can assemble another team too, you know.
Right. Yeah, I didn't really consider the Bulls just because, you know, they're going to be on national TV so much.
Yeah,
that,
that's, yeah.
You're not going to learn a whole lot new about them until the playoffs. I mean, I totally get your idea, especially if you're a Bulls fan, if obviously you want to see history, you have a pretty definite idea that they're not going to run it back again. So it's, yeah, I mean, you would take that opportunity, absolutely. But yeah, and another reason, yeah, the Lakers would have been on there for me too, but I just feel like national TV, they're going to be on there quite a bit. And the Sonics and the Pacers were teams I kind of considered also that were not national TV games. But yeah, for me, the last team I picked was and I thought about the Blazers, you know, who obviously you know, they have Sabonis and they have, you know, a kind of a fun mix of players, you know, Kenny Anderson, you know, guys who are, you know, they're pretty good team. You know, they have just kind of like a weird mix. Rashid's there. So that'd be a fun team to watch. The Celtics, who are, you know, as you mentioned, you know, crazy pace, they do the pressing, you know, that's the first year for Rick Pitino, a lot of players shooting threes. You know, they have Antoine Walker, they got some, you know, young potential guys like Ron Mercer, Chauncey Billups. Like I bet they would be fun to watch, but they might be a little bit too chaotic, you know, maybe making too many mistakes. Like they might be, you know, almost too fast, where the, you know, when you're fast but reckless, it's not quite as fun. The Hornets, you know, they have Anthony Mason and Vlade and Glenn Rice, but they kind of play slow and a little bit sluggish, so that was less interesting. And the Cavs, who actually, you know, are an interesting mix of talent. We're going to get into them a little bit more because they have so many young players, but they also have, like, you know, seeing Sean Kemp there in his first year, seeing Wesley Person. You know, Fratello's teams are generally pretty sluggish and slow, but they are actually were more middle of the pack this year, but not quite enough there. The team that I did pick was the Wizards. You know, you got Rod Strickland, a point guard. You got Chris Webber, Juwan Howard, and then you got, you know, some guys who, like, might, you know, potentially are still, like, young enough where you might be like, okay, this guy might be fun to watch, like Calvert Chaney, Tracy Murray. You also have a very young Ben Wallace, and you have Cham God, who, you know, is, you know, going to be the internet legend type stuff. So, you know, there's a lot of reasons for them. They actually, you know, they aren't a great offensive team. They're right in the middle of the pack. They're 14th in the league, but, you know, they play fast enough. They have, you know, some of that great passing with Strickland and Weber that I think that they would be a good team to watch. And they're a team that's been not very good forever. So, you know, just seeing them, and you could talk yourself into them being a team on the rise, which, you know, be fun to watch.
Yeah, and two teams that I picked for, you know, very similar reasons. One is the New Jersey Nets, and they're a team that, you know, had gone through a real rough patch, you know, in the 90s. And, you know, obviously they had some decent years with Chuck Daly, but then, you know, he's kind of out. And then Calipari comes in from the college ranks. He has a terrible first year. But by this year, they're starting to get pretty good. I mean, they're starting to emerge a little bit. Fun little team with Keith Van Horn, Sam Cassell, Kerry Kittles, you know, Kendall Gill, Jason Williams, those guys. A lot of guys just sharing the ball, a lot of guys scoring, no real one star. So kind of fun there. And they're playing a pretty fun style, and they're playing well. well, too. And that's one of the things, too, seeing the kind of turnaround and seeing, hey, is this Calipari thing going to work? You know, it's, and you know, Jason, I think it's going to. I think it's going to work forever. But, yeah, no, you're seeing kind of an emerging team there, a team that's sort of putting it all together a little bit. And then I chose the Spurs as well, because obviously you have rookie Tim Duncan. He's coming in with David Robinson. You have, obviously, the blip of the year prior where they kind of fell apart. But it was obvious that this was just kind of a sleeping giant. And, you know, once you got another bit of talent on there, they'd be, you know, great. And yeah, they're starting to kind of get good again. Duncan's, you know, the guy's ready to go from day one. I mean, he's already scoring a lot. We talked about that on our first episode. Within the first week, he's already dropping 20 and 10. Like, it's nothing. So he's already coming in. He's already emerging. Not maybe the most exciting, the most aesthetically pleasing team, but it's pretty cool to be able to say, hey, this guy, you know, watch Tim Duncan, a guy that's definitely on the pace to be Rookie of the Year. Seems like an easy choice to be Rookie of the Year. Teaming up with David Robinson, a little Twin Tower stuff, and a team that, hey, now we got another contender in the West here with this Spurs team that's right back at it, and a team that was good throughout the 90s, had one bad year, now they're back at it with, you know, the eventual, or, you know, what we all assume and what obviously would become the Rookie of the Year. So they're kind of a fun team too, even if the style of play isn't that great. But I mean, there's not really, if you're going for style of play, like you said, there's really only a few teams. It's like the Celtics and a few of these other guys, but a lot of them don't play well. They just play fast. And it's like, yeah, the rest of the league is very slow and very prodding. So you just kind of have to find whatever you can one way or another. And the Spurs seem like a pretty fun one for me.
Yeah, no, I totally see your reasoning for, I think we're basically on the same page for the teams. It's just, yeah, like I said, this is a pretty sluggish era. There's a lot of, the pickings to a degree are slim. I mean, there's fun and interesting teams, but as far as, you know, just the day-to-day, like, stylistically pleasing basketball, this was not the era for that for the most part.
No.
So getting into what actually happened in January 98, we start with, this is more interesting than anything, just of what might have been the future plans here, but the Mavericks, they named Don with two N's, the Nelson, their director of scouting, so the son of the more famous Don Nelson, the coach. He'd actually been in Phoenix as an assistant for a few years. He was also his dad's assistant in Golden State for a long time. So the idea was that... was that Don with two N's was going to become the head assistant next season and actually take over as head coach in the 2001 season. So he was going to, that was kind of the plan of succession there. Instead, what really happened is that Don with two N's became the general manager of the team and was still there for a long time. And of course, Don with one N had his falling out with Mark Cuban in the mid 2000s. And interesting that the plan of succession, it was very different from what happened. Not I guess a huge surprise, but interesting there. So also Mark Aguirre was named a scout for the Mavericks, which I thought was interesting there. We're got an upcoming episode on numbers that were retired and, you know, omissions and, you know, interesting facts about that. And interestingly, Mark Aguirre's number is not retired for the Mavericks. And we were wondering if maybe the relationship was not good with the organization, but at least at one point it was. So mm-hmm. We'll have to dig in and that, but I found that interesting. Yeah. So our player of the week for the first week in January is Rick Smits, averaging 22 points per game and 11 rebounds per game.
How did Rick Smits average 22 and 11 for a week?
I don't know. He was pretty good. Yeah.
I mean, he's
know.
Fine. Jeez, come on, guys.
Yeah, I don't know. you seem a little more gassed.
I don't know. I just can't imagine Rick Smits dropping like 22 and 11 in a week. But that's all right.
Don't see that.
Did he have he must have had like one 60-point, like 30 rebound game that really propped the week up.
Now him having a 60-30 game would be much more surprising to me than him having 22 and 11 over a week. I don't know. that one would – there are not a whole lot of 60-30 games in NBA history. I think most of them are by Wilt. So,
obviously, Rick Smith has won. That's, you know, obviously what happened here.
Obviously what happened, yes. A perhaps bigger surprise to me, Greg Ostertag blocked 11 shots in a game against the 76ers. I just can't imagine – you know, usually players have to jump to block shots. I don't recall Ostertag jumping a whole
lot. The Sixers were pretty bad, so they may have just ran into him, and then they called it a block. That's a distinct possibility.
It is a possibility. That's a good point. So, and some coaching milestone here for Bill Fitch, the coach of the Clippers. He tied Dick Motta for third on the coaching victory list. Would pass him in this month, and on the 7th, he tied that record and went over the Grizzlies. Although the Clippers did not have a whole lot of wins this month, so it might have taken a little while for him to actually pass that record. He also passed the 2,000 games coach milestone for his career. So there you go, Bill Fitch. Not a season with a whole lot of good things for him. So, you know, just being able to pass these milestones is a nice thing for him.
Yeah, yeah. So some good coming out of the Clippers. But
not a whole lot. Yeah, not a whole lot of good there. And another thing for Dallas, which was interesting, I think we may have mentioned this a little bit, but before, but yeah, the Kurt Thomas like broke his ankles like four times in a season, and so he he talks about being determined to make a comeback, and his playing career was definitely seemed like it was in jeopardy at this point. He was 25, so he actually was hired as a assistant coach by Don Nelson. So he it looked like he might be going into that track. So there were some fears of his that he even says, I know I might not come back as a player, so I manage my money. I don't live like I make $1 million, live a good life, but I keep my money in the bank and invest it wisely. So he's trying to there's some fears here, and it's interesting what happened with the rest of his career.
Yeah, I mean, in retrospect, we're kind of jump ahead, is that we're looking at the Kurt Thomas's career in a crossroads, and anybody who watches the current NBA knows that god damn, Kurt Thomas played 15 more seasons after this. So it's kind of funny to see this guy sort of reaching what he thinks might be the end of his career, the narrative around it being like, well, geez, it's gonna be really hard for this guy to come back. Came back, and I don't think he really got hurt ever again. Like, he was just kind of old man Kurt Thomas from then on. Like, he lost, had no athleticism, but he hung around the league forever and played pretty well and played a big role on a lot of different teams. I mean, he was great for the Suns, in the mid-2000s as well. Had some decent runs with the Bulls and the Knicks as well. So yeah, just interesting that, yeah, he would have 15 more seasons after this when it really looked like this might be the end of the line for him. So pretty cool to see him kind of get it together as did. But yeah, really awesome too that he became an assistant coach this year too, and that's just it's unique. But I'd like to see that more, where players just get hurt, and I want to see like Kawhi Leonard become an assistant coach for the San Antonio Spurs. Sure. Or whatever. Yeah. Like, they need that. Maybe more. I want that more. Yeah, I want more hurt players being on the bench in management roles for some reason. So
sure, sounds fun. Yeah. So the Rockets, we're going to get into them a little bit later, but they're having some struggles this year, and part of it might be because of who's leading their team in block shots.
Yeah, reserve Matt Bullard, the guy that was once thought to be only a 3-point shooter. He has 14 blocks in this year, which, I mean, that's, that's only injured Hakeem Olajuwon. He has 31, has more for the Rockets, so he's out. So Matt Bullard is your number one at 14. Here's what Matt Bullard said. He said, I should have had a couple more, but our stats crew missed them. He said this jokingly, I think, as a joke. So Rudy Tomjanovich says his defense has really improved since the first time he was with us. I can use him in a lot more situations now. Don't get too excited, Rudy T, because Bullard would not fare well for the remainder of the year. He had only 9 blocks the remainder of the season, and that was mostly propped up by a 3-block game against Minnesota. He'd registered no blocks in 5 postseason games and ended the year ranked 6th on the Rockets in blocks behind Hakeem, of course, Clyde Drexler, Kevin Willis, Charles Barkley, and Athella Harrington. So at this point, he's got a lot of blocks, but he wouldn't at the end of the year. But yeah, it speaks to some issues with that team and their defense. If Matt Bullard is leading your team in blocks, that's probably not great.
Yeah, and block party can't last forever.
No, yeah. Hey.
Yeah. So, interesting, out of Toronto, there's a note there that Tracy McGrady, they feel as though Coach Darryl Walker feels as though he had poor work habits, and he had started a couple of games, but then only played in a minute against Indiana just the next game later. So yeah, Walker's quote, he could be a very good basketball player, he could be out of the league in a couple years, it's all up to him. He had dealt with a foot injury at the beginning, or I guess he had a foot injury, also dealt with a jaw injury at the beginning of the season. So McGrady asked for a meeting with Walker and the GM Glenn Grunwald when the coach aired his concerns. I just have to continue to work hard and show what I can do. My memory of that Butch Walker is that he was, Darryl Walker was that, Butch Walker, I think, was a coach also at,
yes.
In Toronto, but
yeah,
that's right. So yes, so maybe I'm thinking of Butch Walker, who was in Toronto.
Oh, no, are you thinking of Butch Carter? Are we thinking of Butch Carter?
Butch Carter, yes. Is there a Butch Walker that exists somewhere, or I don't know?
I don't know. Yeah, let's find out. I'm sure there's a Butch Walker that exists somewhere, but
probably. So anyway, so yeah, I'm sorry for.
Oh, is it a singer-songwriter? Are you thinking of Butch Walker, singer-songwriter? Lead guitarist for the glam metal band South Gang of the late 80s, early 90s?
Oh, yeah. I'm a huge South Gang fan, so that's absolutely.
Or the lead vocalist and guitarist of rock band Marvelous 3 from 1997 to 2001. That's probably
your favorite. Oh, yeah. I mean, I'm also a big Marvelous 3 fan, so.
Yeah, yes. That's probably your favorite.
Marvelous mistake on my part. Yes, I'm sorry. Yes, so Darryl Walker. Anyway, so things not going well in Toronto either, as we will get to as well. So the first moving on or early in the month, the first Sonics-Cavs game since the big Sean Kemp trade happened. The Sonics won that one fairly easily. Basically, like, the players from it, like, no one seemed to really be talking about it. Hersey Hawkins even said that. No one in the locker room has really talked about playing Sean or Cleveland. George Karl said, hey, I'm looking forward to seeing him. It's been a long time. I thought it was interesting to look at how the Sonics-Bucks-Cavs trade is looking at this point in the season. At the end of January, the Sonics were 35-10, leading the league. Vin Baker was named an All-Star. The Cavs, 26-18, and that is pretty impressive because their top rotation players, they have Wesley Person and Sean Kemper. They're really only experienced players. Other than that, they have Derek Anderson, Brevin Knight, Cedric Henderson, Zdrunas Ilgauskas, who are all rookies. Actually, all of them were named for the rookie game, which is the first time four players from one team had been named for that. And then Bob Sura and Vitaly Potapenko, who are all like second, third year players. So that's really like to be 26-18 with, you know, having almost no experience in your team. That's really impressive, I think.
Yeah, and we always talk about the narrative too that like Sean Kemp immediately got traded, immediately got fat, and immediately got bad. And it's like, no, that wasn't the case at all. Like there was a few good years, and this is one of them. I mean, this is a good team that really propped up a lot by, you know, Sean Kemp's play. And that's one of those weird trades that kind of works for both teams. Like a lot of times people you know, look at who won this trade or whatever. And maybe long term you could say one of the two teams. I don't know that anybody really long term won this trade. But at the time right now, you look at this and it's the Sonics are chugging along just as they were before, and the Cavs are a little improved as well. So it's kind of cool to see both those teams get it together pretty well and have good outlets. But yeah, we try to fight the narrative that Sean Kemp was not bad immediately. He had a few good years with the Cavs. It's just once you know, the lockout happened, and then really until he went, you know, obviously to the Blazers when it kind of all fell off the wheels, and then the Magic, and we won't talk about that. So.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah, and the Bucks, you know, they were 500 at this point, which they'd been 33-49 the previous year. So Terrell Brandon and Tyrone Hill, you know, all playing well. Neither made the All-Star team, but, you know, they were definitely, I think Brandon might have, but he had been injured for part of that time. But nevertheless, it looks like it's working pretty well for all three teams, at least at this point. We'll check in on that later on in the season as well. But going to January 10th, 1998, Scottie Pippen is back. And it just been a few days ago, there was some articles about like, we're not really sure when he's coming back. You know, it's going to be a while, you know, could be a few weeks. But yeah, he came back and finally he's Scottie Pippen is back. And you know, despite the trade demands, he's playing as a Chicago Bull.
Yeah, it's pretty nuts that he would do this, finally come back, the 10th of January. And the Bulls definitely needed him, too. I mean, they were obviously, they were doing okay, but it's like they needed that extra little boost that they would get from Pippen. But as we'll see, it's a year that doesn't quite, there's always this weird injury concern with him, and there's always, he's never feels like he's 100% healthy at any point during the year. But I mean, obviously he helps them pretty well. They're 24-11 through the first 35 games, which again, that's like not bad, but it's like the Bulls, you know, they're trying to win their third straight title. They won 72 and 69 games the year prior. So it's like, you know, just winning 56 games, just winning 55 games. That's not enough for this team. I mean, this is, especially knowing that this is it for them. It's like, no, we want to go out on top. Like we want to win this last title. So yeah, just being really good wasn't enough. They needed to be great. And that's sort of helped. But what's interesting though is that Pippen really had no plans. We've talked about this on numerous episodes as well. He had no plans to return to the Bulls at this point in season. Numerous times he said he wanted out of Chicago. In a halftime interview, he said, I ain't coming back. I want to be traded. I want to go to Phoenix or LA. You know, we talked, you know, in many other episodes where Ernie Grunfeld at one point just said again, how many times is he going to ask for a trade? Like, you know, Ernie Grunfeld, who was the Knicks president and GM, is just like, I don't care anymore. Like, who cares? Somebody trade for Scottie Pippen. I'm sick of hearing about him getting traded. But yeah, it's been an ongoing saga is if he's going to get traded, if he's going to ever, you know, play for the Bulls. We see that he plays for the Bulls, and we'll find out, but I feel like a lot of the rumors kind of stopped at that point. It was like, all right, look, like let's just play out these next few months. You'll go, you'll move on, we'll all move on, but let's just maybe do this thing for, you know, a few more months, then we'll figure it out after that. But yeah, interesting enough, it's been a year of drama and saga for Pippen and the Bulls, and in some ways it won't end because it's going to be not smooth sailing the rest of the way. Because yeah, as I said, Pippen is kind of you know, he's good, he's still having good seasons, but you can definitely tell that his body is not where it needs to be almost this entire season.
So next we have Steve Smith was named NBA Player of the Week, averaged 26.3 points per game, 4.7 assists per game, 4.3 rebounds per game. It's his first Player of the Week award. And finally, the stopping the bleeding for the Hawks, as they had had a, I think, a seven-game losing streak after their start of the season 11-0. So they're we'll get to where they are at the end of the month, but they're finally at least not in complete free fall. So helping out with that. There's a interesting report from CNNSI. Jackie McMullen discussed the controversy over Two-Ball, which is the All-Star Weekend event, replacing the dunk contest that pit players, NBA and WNBA players, in a shooting contest similar to what the Shooting Stars event would later become. Players mad at the league that the league had not notified them that they were getting rid of it and that they were going to the Two-Ball, and they also felt that the NBA was being used to promote women's basketball, which apparently they resented to somewhat. There was actually some talk of actually boycotting the event, but they all got together and thought maybe that wasn't the best idea. But this is sort of an interesting look at the perception of the WNBA at the time, and also the thought of the this is tied in a lot, of course, into the upcoming labor issues that are going to be going on with the lockout and all.
Yeah, it's again yet another the league and the players are just on different wavelengths at this point. I mean, everything that almost every decision that's being made is the league hate, the players hate it. You could tell that these two are they're warring factions right now, and something's going to come to a head pretty quickly here.
Yeah. So moving on a little bit to January 16th, Nevada, New Mexico-based Maloof family buys a 24% of the Sacramento Kings, which is going to have interesting implications, of course, in the years to follow. So something I hadn't realized is that the Rockets had actually been owned by George Maloof, who's the father of Gavin. I'm forgetting the other brother's name off the top of my head.
What was that guy's name? I'll figure it out. Yeah.
All right. Yeah.
Was it just Joe? Was it Joe Maloof?
I don't know. We should know this. Try not to speculate on his name.
No, anyway, I think we should definitely speculate more.
Barry? No, I don't know.
Barry Maloof. That's it.
Anyway, you look it up and I'll describe.
It was Joe.
Oh, it was Joe. Okay.
It was Joe and Gavin. Everybody knew Gavin, though, because that's a cool name. Joe's a stupid name.
Yeah, so. There you go. So anyway, yeah, good memory there. But anyway, so their father, George Maloof, had been the owner of the Rockets in the late 70s and early 80s. And so now the family is back. George had passed on at this point, I believe, in 1980. There are four brothers, but obviously Gavin and Joe become the ones who are well known for owning the Rockets. At this point, it's a minority ownership, but they have there are options in which they can actually buy out the Kings ownership at this point. So some interesting things going on there. There's also some talk about maybe they would play a few games in Albuquerque, and there's a fear that perhaps the team would be moved to Albuquerque or more likely Las Vegas, although there's obviously the gambling implications in Las Vegas that the NBA is fearful of at the time. From this day, Charles Barkley pleaded not guilty to the charges that he had thrown a bar patron through a window. No trial date was set, but there's a pretrial hearing in early February, so we'll see how that goes. On the 18th of January, Robert Parrish, his number is retired, 00, raised in the Fleet Center. Also marked the return of Larry Bird to Boston as the head coach of the Indiana Pacers, his first time coaching there, obviously, as he's a rookie coach with the Pacers. I wonder perhaps if there's a video tribute to at the beginning of the game, and Parrish may have been upset his thunder was stolen by his teammate,
That's the dumbest thing ever. Got it.
Definitely a possibility there.
Yeah, definitely. It just to kind of bring it to the real world, it reaffirms why I've really disliked Paul Pierce my entire life.
And we have a trade. This is not as exciting a month for trade as it was last month.
I don't know about that. This trade's pretty awesome, man.
Eric Snow is traded from the Sonics to the 76ers for a second round pick.
Wow.
Yeah, change the league, yeah.
The ripples through the league.
Yeah. Although, yeah, it's interesting. This involves Philly, of course, again, and Philly is kind of getting some of the core of its guys that will eventually lead it to the championship or the finals in 2001. So mm-hmm.
We talked about in the last episode that like they kept trying to find the complimentary piece to Allen Iverson, and little by little we're like, hey, let's just get guys that like we'll just let Iverson kind of do whatever he wants to do, and we'll fill in the other gaps. Whatever Iverson's not good at, we'll just have these other guys. And Snow's obviously a good passer, a good defender, so it makes a lot of sense that they would bring him in, and a guy who doesn't need the ball in his hands to, sort of affect the game a lot of ways. So yeah, we're starting to see them sort of build towards that and build towards the implication that, hey, let's just let Allen Iverson have the ball all the time, and that's probably where our most success will come from.
So big milestone here of Chick Hearn of the Lakers broadcaster announces 3,000 consecutive games. His last broadcast that he missed was November 20th, 1965. So
that's ridiculous.
33 years later, so pretty impressive. He would, of course, still broadcast Lakers games for a few more years into the early 2000s. And I completely forgot about this, but January 20th, Chris Webber was arrested with charged with assault, marijuana possession, and several traffic offenses after he allegedly resisted police officers who had stopped him on suspicion of speeding. This is according to the Washington Post, and they apparently had pulled him over. I don't see the Washington Post article. I had a link to it in front of me, but anyway, it sounds like it was basically it may have been a driving while black situation, and he happened to have there were some drugs in the car or whatever, but it was basically one of those targeting situations. So, mm-hmm. Yes, he was driving a luxury vehicle. The actual vehicle is not described here, but yeah. So anyway, it was. But we've talked about, there were several situations of there of course had been the Charles Spiro situation. There had been some other guys. Portland, there were some drug issues as a rider. Iverson there, who there been a lot of focus, especially in this season, on off court behavior. And this is another, tarnishing the NBA reputation type thing on these issues. So
yeah, exactly. And it's another guy that's sort of a quote-unquote emerging star or whatever that's getting into some issues that might be, then the league might be hesitant then to sort of prop him up as a guy that, is a future star or a marketable star or whatever. So yeah, and we've seen that, like you said, with a guy like Latrell Sprewell, who obviously probably isn't as big of a star, but I don't know. Latrell had a pretty good thing too.
Yeah, he was all NBA 1 year.
Yeah, exactly. So, he was on that level, or Allen Iverson, as you said before, and a lot of guys. Yeah, it kind of felt like they were, getting every, new star that was kind of coming, or a lot of them new emerging stars were all sort of this having issues with the law one way or another, whether, justified or not. And it put the NBA in a bad spot. And again, like you talk about the warring factions, where the NBA is their players are sort of being portrayed as being a certain type of person or a certain type of, whatever. And then you have the media sort of looking at it and going, oh, here we go. This league's filled with these kind of guys or whatever. And so, yeah, it's that weird awkwardness that's going on in this time in the NBA where, you're still having those old stars of the yesteryear. And as you said, the guys that really wanted it and the guys that really liked to play and appreciate the game. And then you got these new cats that are just, criminals and all this sort of stuff. So you're seeing that weird, sort of juxtaposition of those two eras, and the media is really pouncing on that too, and really playing it up as well in the league would really in a lot of ways play it up as well. So yeah, as we said, more warring going on between league players, media, executives, all that good stuff. So
moving on a little bit, there's Antoine Walker. He's in his second season, and he made the All-Star team, having statistically a nice season. One of the emerging stars of the Celtics, who are playing. They struggle a bit this month, but playing fairly well early on in the Rick Pitino era. Tino talked about a contract extension. He says, "We're going to sign Antoine. There's not a shadow of doubt in my mind. I'd be shocked if he didn't resign. He's like a son to me." But later he says, a $100 million contract, probably not going to happen. "We won't bankrupt the organization. You can't run a business to lose money. Maybe Minnesota can do it. I want to see if Minnesota can make money after it's signed Garnett, Marbury, and Gugliotta." So kind of talking out of both sides in his mouth there, but kind of the you know, with the lockout coming and, you know, the labor issues coming, the sort of the, you don't hear like guys speaking out that forcefully anymore when it comes to, you know, players' money and mm-hmm. so on and so forth. So,
yeah, just definitely a weird quote. Yeah, we're going to sign him, but we really don't want to sign him for a lot of money. I mean, like, yeah, hopefully right. he'll stay here for, you know, less than he's worth.
For peanuts, because, right. Yeah, exactly.
How
yeah.
can we possibly make money as an NBA franchise without, you know, right. paying these players, yeah. you know? All right, Rick.
Yes. All right. Fair enough. So Shaq had an interesting quote as well about Penny Hardaway saying that you know, he keeps up with you know, landing newspapers and the internet, believes the media there is roughing his former teammate with the idea that Penny might leave a team. His quote is, "Let's put it this way: he bought a lot of land there, but hasn't started building anything yet." So, interesting thing for him to weigh in on, but. Another thing that I thought was interesting is there's an incident described between Mark Price, who's playing with the Magic, and Steve Nash with the Suns, is that he was so frustrated by Nash that Price simply grabbed Nash after a move in which Nash put the ball behind his back and between his legs before taking it to the basket. So I had never thought of Steve Nash and Mark Price, you know, like ever interacting. Obviously, Price is right like on the end of his career here. So Nash called the said it was the playgrounds of Canada. His move, and he had 16 points and 7 shooting and 9 assists. So you know, the narrative of Nash's career, of course, is that he kind of struggled early on before going to you know, the Mavericks and, you know, becoming the great player that he was, and obviously, you know, even more so once he came back to the Suns, but obviously was, you know, at least showing flashes early on in his career here. So
yeah, a lot of it was playing time. I mean he played a decent amount, but yeah, I mean, this guy's average, you know, at the end of the year we'll look and he averaged, you know, 9 points a game, not as many assists. He was actually weird, he's more of kind of a scorer at this time, you know, he like sort of emerged later because they have a ton of guys that are passing the ball anyway, but yeah, he was actually pretty, like, kind of came in as a pretty decent scorer, pretty decent three-point shooter as well. I mean, this guy taking, you know, two and, you know, almost over 2.5 threes per game, and in this era that's quite a lot, and obviously we'd see it, you know, later years he'd kind of put it together even more. But yeah, it's interesting, he's not necessarily as big of an assist guy, but he's a pretty good scorer at this point, you know, playing only, you know, 21 points a game and scoring 9 is pretty good. So yeah, the narrative that he just like was just floating around doing nothing and Dallas just kind of picked him off out of nowhere or whatever, I mean, no, it wasn't that case. I mean, they got in press conference and they signed him. Like, it's obviously that he wasn't, you know, some no-name guy that they got. I mean, that's always the funny thing where people are like, oh, he came out of nowhere and emerged for Dallas, and it's like, oh, no, they had a press conference with him and Dirk standing there. Like, you don't have a press conference for some like role bit player. Like, you know, they thought he was going to be good and he ended up being very good. So yeah, it worked out pretty well.
Yeah, I mean, he dealt with some injuries too. Obviously, the back stuff, you know, I think started early in his career and then went tickets until later. But mm-hmm. Yeah, so we talked about you know, Tyrone Hill, one of the acquisitions for the Bucks. The Bucks signed him to a 5-year, $37.5 million contract extension, which is an odd time of year to do that in January. I don't know if you can even do that necessarily with current NBA rules, but the idea that, you know, extending him at this point in the season, I thought was a fascinating thing. You don't see that too often.
No, and yeah, not Tyrone Hill's really not great either. But
he's okay. Right.
But, you know, whatever you want to do, Milwaukee.
Maybe you got to justify that trade. I don't know, but, yeah.
Yeah, well, we can look ahead and know that didn't really last very long. I think it's gone at some point in the next year. I think they traded him, so.
Yeah. The NBA fined and reprimanded referee Joe Borgia. The idea is he apparently called a foul on Calbert Chaney instead of Chris Webber because he had told Chaney after calling the foul that he called it on Chaney because it would have been Webber's sixth foul.
Oh.
And then he later said that both guys committed the foul, and then he just, you know, in that case, the referee has the discretion of which player to, you know, to call it on. You can't call it on both players. And then that the issue was that he just, you know, told Chaney that for whatever reason. But then later replay showed that Chaney wasn't really even like that near the play. So, weird thing for Borgia to do, but yeah. So
what was the line on that anyway. Game? Do you have any idea what the,
I don't know. Was? Yeah.
Joe.
Oh boy. Yeah. So
that's a good gambling name too. Joe Borgia. I'm pretty sure I've made a bet with a guy named Joe Borgia before. Maybe the same.
Yeah.
Joe Borgia. But yeah.
Maybe. Yeah.
He's definitely always just got like a cigar in his mouth. It's never lit. It's just kind of, you know, it's just there.
Yes. And so on the 23rd of January, Denver tied the single season record with 23 straight losses set by the Grizzlies in 1996. So things not going well in Denver, unfortunately.
God, and they're wearing terrible uniforms too, poo brown uniforms. Yeah. Things aren't going well in Denver.
It's not good, but. But the next day, fortunately, the Nuggets would finally would not break the single season record. They would actually win the next game. Before we get to that, though, Latrell Sprewell is back in the news after a little bit of a absence. His arbitration hearing is going to be at the end, which we'll discuss. But he actually spoke out publicly to Peter Vesey, and he says, "I realize what a big mistake I make, but it's not as if I'm another O.J. Simpson. Yes, I was wrong, but I didn't kill anybody. I'm not a murderer." So, Sprewell.
I mean, to be fair,
which is true. He did not kill anyone, right. Much less two people. So, yeah. Now, granted, he may have gotten some, he may have gotten some treatment as though he was the most evil person in the world. And, you know, and given the scale of things, not quite there. So I get his point, but maybe not.
Yeah, Latrell missed the end of the trial, I guess.
That, right. You know, maybe not articulated.
What do you think or not? I mean, he by the corner of the law, you know, didn't. But yeah,
that's true. That's true. But
Latrell
nevertheless
missed that. He must have been playing when that was going on. So
yeah, maybe it's possible. Yeah, well, he was not playing in the finals, I guess. Yeah, that's a good point.
Yeah, I was going to say,
Anyway, so back to the Nuggets. They after they started 2-39, they finally get the third win. The Nuggets, you know, they're in a situation where they were, you know, almost like what Philly, of course, would famously do with Trust the Process. They were very much trying to get younger and play the young guys and, build up the salary cap that they have. And, Alan Bristow is their general manager. Bill Hanslick's the coach. And, mid-December, there's a quote from Bristow saying, "I think if we had 6, 7, 8 wins now, people would be saying that's okay. We don't want to jeopardize that plan and make change just for change's sake." But later on, they do decide to, instead of their rookie Eric Washington, they try to give some minutes for Johnny Newman, and they scale back for Tony Petit and Danny Fortson. However, Petit and Bobby Jackson do remain starters, so they did kind of back off on that after early on in the season, saying, "Hey, we're going to stick with the young players no matter what." Obviously, no one's that thrilled about them going down as the worst team in NBA history, which they're on the pace at the moment. So we're going to have more on this because there's going to be some big news on this in February. But at least wanted to bring it up here because I do think it's important. It's interesting to see how bad things are going. Obviously, they, kind of were, I don't know exactly forced, but they traded away Antoni McDyess, who was their best player. So, they're trying to move on from that, but, things are not going away. Anyway, they beat the Clippers, who are not, no great shapes themselves, 99-81 to break that streak. Actually did it on the road, interestingly enough. So
yeah, Mike D'Antoni is also an executive there. I think he's the director of player personnel, I believe is his title for the team. So it's kind of fun. And then obviously he'd become coach in a few years during the lockout year. He would be the interim coach when things didn't go well. But yeah, it's always fascinating to see these kind of really bad teams and see sort of what their idea was and what they were trying to go for. But like you said, yeah, it was a sort of an attempt to not tank. You know, that word wasn't quite around as much anymore, but this team wasn't like actively looking to win, 35 games. They were probably okay winning, 9-11 games.
Yeah, they appeared to be, they appeared to be trying to be when they were just were so bad that they had no hope of winning. So. So the All-Star voting is in, and we have in the East, we have Dikembe Mutombo, Grant Hill, Sean Kemp, Michael Jordan, and Penny Hardaway. In the West, we have Shaquille O'Neal, Karl Malone, Kevin Garnett, Gary Payton, and Kobe Bryant. Surprisingly enough, well, it was a little bit of a surprise at the time, I guess. He was the youngest starter in All-Star game history, 19 years, 5 months, 16 days. I believe that he was the first player to be voted in the All-Star game while not actually starting any games for his team, because he was a sixth man for the team. Michael Jordan led all players in votes for a record 9th time. So,
good to be Mike.
Yes, there. We have another first time NBA player of the week, Jason Williams, who averaged 18.3 points and 17.8 rebounds for the Nets.
See, now if Latrell wanted to say, I'll just leave that.
All right,
Latrell wanted to name drop somebody that actually, you know,
Well, yeah, he doesn't know what's going to happen.
He should have known.
true. He should. So the reserves are also chosen for the All-Star game. In the West, we have Eddie Jones, Nick Van Exel, David Robinson, Tim Duncan, Vin Baker, Jason Kidd, and Mitch Richmond. In the East, we have Glenn Rice, Rick Smits, Reggie Miller, Steve Smith, Antoine Walker, Jason Williams, and Tim Hardaway. And we have four Lakers on the All-Star team. It's the first time, I think, since the mid-80s where there was a four of one player on the team. I think the Sixers may have done it, if I'm not mistaken, but either way, it was the first time in quite a long time that it happened. And it's fairly, I think we looked at this before, but it's fairly rare in NBA history. It's happened, you know, like half a dozen times or so. And obviously the Warriors did it the last couple of years. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, and they're the one team that you could see. But yeah, it's not as, you know, you might think, oh, that's not too big of a deal, but it really is. I mean, it's very, very rare in history.
Yeah, so... And we have finally the Latrell Sprewell arbitration hearing happening, where some of the Warriors players are looking to give their versions of what happened. There's some pressure apparently on the players. They feel there's pressure from the front office not to testify in going on. Bimbo Coles and Brian Shaw said that they considered declining to testify before the arbitrator because they feared repercussions from Warriors management for siding with Sprewell. So a big mess there, but there's a lot of kind of reporting going on. Obviously with this arbitration hearing going on, there's a gag order, so the sides are not necessarily talking publicly. They're kind of trying to downplay Johnny Cochran's involvement there, and there's notably that Sprewell has spruced up his image and retained some labor attorneys for the hearing, trying to get going on there. So, in obviously Billy Hunter, there's, as we've talked about, the specter of labor negotiations going on as long as this. So he's avoided kind of mudslinging at the other side, trying to keep the players' union's reputation intact. So, I don't think the details of that are really interesting at this point. There is a lot going on there, but you kind of get a general sum up there. Mm-hmm. We'll dig more into that as the results come in and as the decision comes in. But right now, just basically the hearings are happening, but it's going to be a while before there's really any huge movement going on.
Right. Of course.
Yeah. One more thing about the Nuggets that I think is interesting. So Brian Winters is a Nuggets assistant, and he was actually on the coaching staff for the Grizzlies in '96, where they lost 23 in a row.
So he's hire Brian Winters,
So his quote is, "I hoped I would never have to experience that again, and certainly not this soon, if ever." So yeah, not great for Brian Winters. Speaking of coaches who are not necessarily thrilled with how things are going on, Doug Collins is back. Doug Collins loves to just like pop off on and say weird things to the media. So he says the Pistons are not playing particularly well this year. And his quote is, "After the season is over, I'll ask Mr. Davidson, the Pistons owner, are you satisfied with the direction that the team has said? Are you happy with me as your coach?" And then he basically said he would say the same thing to Grant Hill. And meanwhile, Hill, not necessarily all that excited. This is not giving Collins a ringing endorsement about being coach. He says, "You have to wait till the end of the season, evaluate what's happened and where we want to go, and see how the coaching staff fits into that." So not necessarily super excited about about all of that. So
I'm looking at Brian Winters' career. I mean, you do not want to hire Brian Winters if you want to be so obviously he was with the Nuggets, as you mentioned. After the Nuggets, he went to the Golden State Warriors in 1999. They went 19-63. The following season, they went 17-65. It's 2001, 2002. He actually coached a little bit. He went 13-46 after they fired Dave Cowens. They were 21-61. He's out there. Eric Musselman takes over. So then he emerges. So he does the Indiana Fever for a while, the WNBA. I'm not going to look them up right now. But then in 2013, he emerges with the Charlotte Bobcats, and they go 21-61. So Brian Winters has not seen a lot of winning basketball. I wonder. Now I got to check the Indiana Fever. I got to see if the Indiana Fever were any good, because if he goes there and they were terrible, then I don't know about this Brian Winters fella. But
he was, you know, played with the Bucks during the years in which they were pretty good. So at least playing career wise, he did okay. But yeah, the coaching career, not so. How was he with the Fever?
Okay, they were all right. They were 16-16 this first year with them, 16-18, 15-19, 21-13. They made it all the conference semis, and then 21-13 to conference semis. So, okay, they're all right. They're not bad.
Yeah.
But, yeah, so yeah. I guess he saw some winning basketball in the last decade of his coaching career, so.
Yeah, indeed. So, a few more notes on the Sprewell arbitration hearing on the second day, which is the 29th of the month. Sprewell and PJ Colosimo did actually shake hands for the first time and acknowledge each other casually. This is according to Craig Sager. And then three Warriors players did testify. Felton Spencer, Joe Smith, and Bibo Coles did testify before the arbitrator, John Furyk. And some of the assistant coaches also testified. So there's a 12-hour session of a testimony going on there. So that those are kind of the keynotes of what was going on during the during that. And with that, we pretty much have the end of what happened with the end of the month. Shaquille O'Neal was player of the month. He had a 29 points, 12.8 rebounds, 2.8 blocks. Larry Bird was coach of the month for the Pacers. We'll get into how that well they did. So the best teams for the month. The Bulls were 13-3. The Pacers were 12-2. The Spurs were 14-3, and the Wolves were 10-4. This is the first time they had been seven games over 500 in their franchise history. So lots of history being made there. Teams that were struggling: the Rockets are 6-11 with Keem's obviously out with injury. The Magic are 4-12 with Penny Hardaway being out for most of that time. We talked about his struggles last month. The Celtics are 6-10, and the Blazers are 6-9. Meanwhile, if you look at the bottom of the league, the East teams at the bottom of the East actually played reasonably well. The Sixers were 7-8, where they'd been 7-21 before January began. The Raptors were 6-8, where they'd been 4-26 previously. So they're not necessarily playing well, but at least playing better. Iverson had played pretty well after the Jerry Stackhouse trade. Meanwhile, in the West, as we mentioned, the Nuggets really struggled. They ended up the month 2-14 for a 4-40 record. The Mavericks were 3-11 for an 8-36 record, and the Warriors for the month were 1-14 with an 8-35 record. So, we'll get more into this later on as it becomes more apparent. But the disparity is really interesting between the playoff teams in the West and the non-playoff teams. Like, there is going to be a huge gap between the quality in teams. Right now, it's not that vast, but it's going to get worse as the season goes on.
Yeah, it's starting to emerge now where you have your eight, and it's like those eight are definitely in the playoffs, and the rest are just like not even close. And right now, you know, it's only about three or four game separation between the eighth seed and the first team out. And then after that, it really drops off. And as you said, as we kind of are going to play out, it's going to drop off so much where there's not even a race for the eighth seed. It's just like the teams that are in the playoffs are in, and the ones that are not are so far out of it. Whereas the East is a little bit more of a big blob in the middle there, and a lot of people competing for the last few spots in the playoffs. So it's pretty cool to see that.
Yeah, absolutely. So anything else to talk about for January?
No, I think we're good. Yeah, I'm going to watch the Royal Rumble, see if Stone Cold can pull it off, and see how this see how this casket match works out. I think it's going to go pretty well for the Undertaker. He's got Kane on his side.
Oh,
now.
Yeah.
So, I mean, yeah.
Yeah, I think the Kane and Undertaker, their issues are past them. They're never going to ever
fight
again.
Brothers don't fight. I mean, brothers, So it's going to be perfect.
They had some disagreements, but absolutely, yeah, I think it's going to go
Water under the bridge. We'll see how it goes. They're all good now.
About it.
But I'm really pumped to see Mike Tyson's gonna be there too. That'd be pretty cool. See what
that'll
be the baddest man on the planet.
I'm sure he won't make any mistakes by calling any wrestlers by the wrong name or like that. So
he won't open an ice cream franchise a few years early
though. He definitely won't do that. All right, well, thanks everyone for checking us out. You can follow us at Over and Back NBA on Twitter. You can also follow us at NBA 20 Years Ago, where we tweet out what's going on for exactly what happened 20 years ago. On that, you get the idea at this point. Also, we're on Facebook at Over and Back NBA. You can find us at the Step Back at fansided.com. We're also on iTunes, Stitcher, Google Play, TuneIn, pretty much any place you want to listen to your podcast. We are there. If you would like to rate and review us on your favorite podcast service, we would greatly appreciate it. Helps people follow us and find us and all the good stuff. So thanks for listening. We'll be back again soon.